I'm Brenda Power, and this is The Media Show. In this edition, as RTE's deficit goes through the roof...
I think you'll be surprised, though, to hear that by the end of this year, the RTE deficit will be 50 million. I mean, it's an unconscionable amount of money.
We ask, is the licence fee good value?
TV licence fee, I think, is extortionate, particularly with the quality of programmes you get in RTE.
So what shape is the Irish television market in? We're talking to Larry Bass, RTE's Glenn Killane, and TV3's David McRedmond.
I completely reject the notion of cheap and nasty. I don't think there's nasty television.
But first, RTE's troubles are not just financial. The long-awaited report on the Father Reynolds case was finally published yesterday.
A significant failure of managerial and editorial controls. The BAI's assessment of RTE's Mission to Pray programme. RTE is fined €200,000 for broadcasting breaches.
Our producer, Helen Shaw, has been looking at its findings. OK, Helen, we had the leaked briefing document a couple of weeks back, so we know the gist of it. There was a breakdown of editorial control, there was a lack of note-taking, there was evidence of groupthink. So what's new in this?
So, Brenda, I think what is new in the report is the detail. Anna Carraher, who investigated the matter for the BAI, the broadcasting regulator, has produced a 34-page report. She actually submitted this at the end of February. As we know, since then, RTE has already made significant changes. It's introduced new guidelines. The head of news and current affairs, Ed Mulhall, has retired. Here's how the Director General, Noel Curran, responded to the findings.
I think it's a very difficult report for RTE. It's a very difficult day for RTE and for everyone who believes in the standards of journalism that we've applied in RTE over decades. I think that the standards applied to the allegations made against Father Kevin Reynolds were well below what we expect from current affairs. I think some people will find parts of the report shocking in that regard. I also think it highlights, as we discovered ourselves when we looked into this, that there were problems and ambiguities in RTE's own guidelines and in terms of some of our processes around this. I think what we need to do now is we need to learn from this. Over the last number of months, we have put in place a number of steps to try and ensure to say to the public that we are learning from this, that we will learn from this, and we will do everything in our power to ensure that this doesn't happen again.
Noel Curran there. So what does Anna Carraher's report tell us? We've heard about groupthink. She talks about a lack of editorial process, a lack of note-taking. She says there's an almost complete absence of documentary evidence. She talks about a lack of scrutiny and challenge within the department, an over-reliance on subjective issues, which led them, she says, to enter into a groupthink mentality where they were convinced that the facts verified their assumptions and which led them to interpret the offer made by Father Reynolds to take a paternity test as not genuine and as a tactic to simply derail the programme. The Minister for Communications, Pat Rabbit, was on 6-1 News within a half an hour of the report being released, and his reaction was damning, to say the least.
It exposes the programme to be a shoddy, unprofessional, cavalier, damaging piece of work. Systemic failings, beyond belief that a programme that had won such a high reputation for its investigative journalism should put together a piece of work based on, frankly, no more than uncorroborated gossip. Really shocking in parts, more serious than I had suspected.
Brenda, what's also interesting about what the minister was saying was that he intends to meet the Director General and the board at 8 a.m. on Tuesday morning, post the bank holiday. He's repeatedly asked by Brian Dobson whether he had confidence in the Director General, Noel Curran, and in the RTE board. And he declined to answer in the affirmative. He said his confidence had been shaken. As you read through the report, it is quite shocking. At every stage, what you're confronted with is an absence of what many of us would see as standard journalistic procedure. I think one of the most compelling aspects in the report is how the Primetime Investigates team handled the offer by Father Reynolds to take a paternity test. In her report, when you come down to the day of transmission itself, on May 23rd, 2011, a letter is sent from Father Reynolds' solicitors directly to Miss Kavanagh. And this letter, it seems, did not make its way to RTE legal affairs team. In this letter, he makes it clear that there are individuals in Kenya who are prepared to testify that during his time there, that there was no evidence that he fathered a child. He also repeats his willingness to take a paternity test. He also makes it clear that he will sue for defamation if the program goes ahead. So at that point, you would have assumed that a really significant alarm bell went off. It appears this letter, on that day of transmission, was forwarded to the producer, the executive producer, and the head of Current Affairs. There's some confusion about the letter. Legal Affairs, according to Anna Carraher's reports, confirm that they were unaware of this letter. It's also at that point, when you read through this final section on page 31 of the report, as to what was the conversation with the head of News and Current Affairs, Ed Mulhall, who at that stage, it says, was dealing with the Obama visit. One of the big issues Anna Carraher brings out in the report is her concern that the reporter herself, Aoife Kavanagh, was the sole conduit for communication with Father Reynolds' solicitors. This has been a costly event for RTE. It's cost them a 200,000 fine via the BAI. They've had an enormous payout through the libel case to Father Reynolds. But probably far more profound now is the loss of trust and credibility for RTE News and Current Affairs. The minister himself is clearly saying that there is more work to be done. As the public begins to engage with the report and the full scale and language of what Anna Carraher has said about how News and Current Affairs operated, that this will have very profound implications for RTE, and it's certainly not going to go away.
Helen Shaw there, and we'll be coming back to this in more depth next week. In Media Watch this week, we are limbering up for the Olympics, as former Irish rugby star Orla Brennan asks, why are sportswomen invisible to the media?
So you've probably heard of Dervla O'Rourke and Fionnuala Britton, but what about Aileen Morrison, Lisa Kearney, Annalise Murphy, Katrina Jennings, Maria McCambridge, Ava Hutchinson and Linda Byrne? These are only some of Ireland's female Olympians that would be representing our country at London 2012. Women have made a significant contribution to sport at all levels, yet their achievements on the whole received limited coverage by the mass media. The quality and quantity of the coverage of women's sport is not an accurate reflection of the amount of sport played or watched by women. A high media profile is essential for attracting sponsorship and spectators and other sources of financial support. The lack of coverage affects women and sport in several ways. Firstly, the public is unaware of women's sporting events and women's achievement in sport. Secondly, there are few widely known positive role models for women and girls. And finally, sportswomen with a low profile don't gain sponsorship. All too often, the little media coverage that sportswomen do receive is of a negative type. Only the other week, as Katie Taylor prepares for her Olympic qualification, she was severely criticised for promoting an energy drink. The front page read, Katie's advert is disgusting. Wouldn't it be more appropriate to focus on all of Katie's amazing achievements, especially as her male counterparts have not received criticism regarding their own similar sponsorship deals? Likewise, during this year's Six Nations campaign, the most media coverage that Fiona Coughlan's Irish women's rugby team received was about their travel disruptions rather than their excellent progress and achievements on the pitch. Despite the increase in newspaper, TV and radio coverage devoted to women's sport in the last decade, the coverage of men's sport still far outweighs that of women's. Hopefully with the London Olympics and other sporting events over the next few months, Aileen Morrison, Lisa Kearney, Annalise Murphy and others will become household names.
And that was Orla Brennan there. Now you can tell us your media stories, what you love and what you hate, by email mediashow@rte.ie or via Twitter @TheMediaShowRTE.
I think you'll be surprised, though, to hear that by the end of this year, the RTE deficit will be 50 million.
Now, in the Dáil this week, Pat Rabbitt was answering questions about RTE's decision to close its London office when he revealed that the station is facing a 50 million euro deficit by the end of this year.
It's an unconscionable amount of money. A great preponderance of that is in the redundancy programme. But they have an acute financial crisis, and I can't acquiesce in RTE running a bottom line of that order.
Now, to put that in context, the TV licence brings in approximately 200 million euro a year, and that's 50% of RTE's operating revenue. So we've been asking how people feel about paying for public broadcasting and whether we're getting value for money.
I don't agree with the licence fee because RTE is generally repeats. More of it should go to DG Carr.
We need a national broadcaster, and if we need this licence fee to fund it, whether it's a tax or a licence, then I would agree with it.
Originally it had a place to guarantee free speech and maybe to develop free speech, but at this stage it's just another tax.
TV licence fee I think is extortionate, particularly with the quality of programmes you get in RTE.
The only true test of what is value for money is people's willingness to pay, and we don't have a situation where people are given a free choice whether to pay or not.
But what about the programmes people watch on telly?
The programmes are antiquated. The Late Late Show, for example, they just change the presenter, but it's still the same tired old format.
I'm largely a passive viewer in that I don't hold remote control very often. I perk up maybe when the current affairs programme is on, but that's about it.
They should be presenting better dramas and cut some of the rubbish.
If they look at what home talent there is and stop repeating formats.
I would tend to switch off. Too much doom and gloom, too much talking about the economy, politics, they just drive me demented.
Now, the dramatic cuts in RTE are already hitting the station's output. I've been talking to the managing director of RTE Television, Len Killane, to TV3's chief executive, David McRedmond, and to Larry Bass of Shin A Will, the independent Irish company behind shows like The Voice on RTE and The Apprentice on TV3, about the health of the Irish television market. I started with RTE's Len Killane on the cash crisis which is threatening the survival of the national broadcaster.
We've lost 60 million a year in advertising since 2008. That's a huge amount of money for an organisation such as RTE to lose, you know, in one fell swoop. There was also a reduction in the TV licence fee in the last budget of the last government. The licence fee was top-sliced to fund TG Cahir. There was a cap put on some of the social welfare funding for the licence fee. So these are enormous challenges for us to face in such a short period of time. We've had to adjust. There's a new wave of new reality in the country overall, and RTE is no different. We're facing up to those challenges just like every other business is. Over time, over the last number of years, because we've had to reduce the cost per hour of our programming, we've reacted, but it's a moving target. Advertising revenue has not stabilised, and we are incredibly dependent on advertising revenue. We are operating in an incredibly competitive market. I think it's arguably the most competitive television market in Europe because we not only have domestic competition, but we have some of the best funded channels in the world competing for audiences here. So when we, at the end of last year, announced that 47 of the top 50 shows in this territory were produced by RTE, that's up against BBC, Sky, TV3. It's not just up against TV3 and TG Carr. We're competing with them on a day-to-day basis.
It's hard to believe that apparently Irish adults spend more than 3.5 hours every day in front of the telly. So, Glenn, what are they watching on your channels?
Chat shows are working very well. The Late Late Show is delivering regularly mid-40% shares, which is extraordinary for a show of the length and a show that has lasted as long as it has. Formats are incredibly important as well. I suppose it's about having those anchor points in your schedules. We went with The Voice. We've also gone with MasterChef, and we put that on RTE2, which was a new departure for us. There is a slight shift on RTE2. We're trying to, while retaining young audiences, try and bring it more mainstream, offer an alternative to RTE1 when we're showing current affairs and news, offer a lighter alternative on 2 for an audience that may traditionally watch RT1 and would not have looked at RT2 as a place to go when they're not interested in watching news and current affairs. So MasterChef and The Craig Doyle Show and shows like that.
And Larry Bass's company makes a lot of the shows that Glenn mentioned, the format shows like The Voice and Dragon's Den on RTE, The Apprentice on TV3.
The business of television is becoming more difficult. I think like all aspects of our economy, as the economy goes south in terms of finances and available revenues, it becomes more difficult to do the job that we all did very successfully for a number of years. As creative independent producers, we have to become creative on the business side as well, not just on our content. When we first set up Shin A Will, we've always worked with brands, we've created shows for brands. The world has changed, so we have to look at a new model of funding television. No longer can you get the same value out of traditional spot advertising because of the proliferation of channels, number one. And now with technology, people want to watch programmes when they want to watch, on devices that they want to watch at a time of their choosing, and they can edit out the advertising breaks. So we have to be aware of that and accommodate the advertisers in a different way. Product placement happens to be one way of doing that. There are other ways of sponsorship and other means. And I think we constantly have to look at how we do that.
And one of the more visible signs of what Larry Bass was talking about there, product placement, is Fair City's deal with Spar, Glencullane.
It was a first for Irish television. It's one where Spar have invested in placing a shop. They put in the infrastructure for the shop and they stock the shop. It's a great association for RTE. It works for us in that it's not too in your face. We have to go there. We are obliged to try and commercialise and bring in as much revenue as we can in order to fund programming. It doesn't go into my back pocket or anybody's back pocket or a shareholder's back pockets. Our shareholders are the public. So our commercial ventures are aimed at trying to drive more programming and pump more money into the independent sector as well as into in-house production within RTE.
The TV3's chief executive, David McRedmond, runs a tight ship at the station's Ballymount headquarters. With a budget and a staff that is tiny by RTE standards, they're live on air from breakfast to late night with Vincent Brown. Now, McRedmond's view is that RTE should be solely funded by public funds, leaving all advertising revenue to the independent commercial sector. But first, to get a look behind the scenes at TV3, our reporter Paula Kniff spent a very long day at the station.
Just to run through briefly, it's Mark for Irvine Welsh, Anna for DIY Les, Aidan's got Noel's Gossip, Alan's got the menu, sex in mind.
If you were to stand here for the first time and be told that we do 14 different programmes a week from the studio, you wouldn't actually believe it, but when it comes down to it, the simple changing of a logo or changing of a virtual set from one set to another can take 5 minutes. The other huge benefit to this studio is that we've got a giant big blue wall, which we use as part of our virtual set. So we project a different set onto the background, so whether it's the midday set, Vincent Brown, even the exposure set all comes from there.
Chance of raising your mic, Siobhan, please.
1 minute back. Thanks.
Hello, my name is Dan Curran and I'm a studio director here at TV3.
Check.
Is Aidan's mic on, Anna?
Today I'm on the early shift, so I would have been in here at 5:30 this morning, setting up and preparing for Ireland AM, looking through the running order. We're on air at 7 o'clock, whether we're all ready or whether we're not ready.
One.
And we're all seen.
My name is Nadine Maloney and I'm a gallery production assistant.
Our next guest has packed a lot into her 24 years.
My job is to make sure the news is always on time, that the presenters know how long they have in an interview and that they wrap on time and that we're on and off air on time as well. You're constantly busy, you're constantly working.
Stand by D.
Three, two, one.
As soon as we come off air at 10, we get a short break and then we come back to set up for midday. Now, the set has already previously been ready for Vincent Brown, so we've got to take the Vincent Brown desk and chairs out, change the virtual background, put the chairs and desks back in, and we're on air at 10 to 12, regardless again of whether we're ready or not, because that is live.
10 seconds. OK, everyone, stand by.
Hello and welcome to Midday. Well, it's the big anniversary. Kate and Wilda married.
Hi, I'm Barry Fassbender. I do studio cameras and lighting in TV3 studios. There's four cameras in studio. They're operated all by myself in the gallery here. So I select which camera I'm going to use, set the shot, and then move on to the next cameras. I'm here 9 years at this stage, so I've seen a big change from day one of the studio to today now.
And that is all we have time for today. Many thanks to all my panellists.
As you come down the ramp on your left-hand side, you can see we've got the auto cue, so presenters see the script that they have on screen in front of them. It's pretty straightforward. And as you come through, you can see that it's a relatively big studio. Starting on the left-hand side, we've got the Ireland AM fashion ramp. We have the sofa. Next set over is just desk that we call the hard set area. Next set around is the news and sports set, which is interchangeable for the late news and also for the 5:30 news as well.
Next up, if you'd like to inject some colour into your wardrobe.
So it's pretty versatile in terms of how many programmes that we get through here as well.
Take one, standby three, mix, cue.
Ireland gets its sixth approval rating from the Troika.
I'm Vincent Brown, I present the Tonight programme on TV3. Obedience guarantees funding. Several times during the day I talk to the producer of the programme that night. Then I usually do some preparation before I leave home, come in here around 9 o'clock, do a bit more preparation, get makeup, write the autocue scripts, do the promos in advance of going to air, and then go in.
Super in. Stay off 4-3 shot. We're communicating what's happening next and trying to keep people informed and trying to do it in such a way that everyone's clear that all the elements, the presenters, cameras,
that they're all informed and know what they're doing.
Four, break two.
My name is Áine Egan and I'm a studio director with TV3. We start off with the morning show at 3:30. Then at 5 o'clock, we record Weathers with Martin King. And then we're into the setup for the news at 5:30. So we're looking at that running order, seeing what lives are in the show. The news at 5:30 then turns straight around into FYI, which is broadcast on the digital station 3E. Wednesdays we record midweek. Then we're into Vincent Brown at 11. You have to have your day very well planned out and know what you want to get done.
Since the introduction of virtual, it just gives us a lot of freedom to do anything, really. I've never seen anything like it. The only days that we don't have anything in here are Saturday and Sunday, which gives the studio time to breathe.
Stay off two, three shot.
That was Paula reporting from TV3 there. So now, David McRedmond, you've an incredible level of live output from a small staff and one studio. I know you're building a new studio for live audiences. You've a range of new digital channels in the plans. But what about content, David? Say Telefornia or some of your more hysterical true crime programmes. It's not just cheap and nasty television.
I don't make any apology for upsetting people. I completely reject the notion of cheap and nasty. I don't think there's nasty television, actually. Cheap, if you're talking about the price of production, yes, we're low cost, but low cost is actually where the future of television is, just as low cost is the future of radio. We know what happens when television and radio are high cost and you can't afford it. Telefornia, I actually happen to think, is a really great programme. It's a programme that TV3 has done best this year. Telefornia is actually pretty real, but I would think Telefornia reflects what's going on in Irish life an awful lot better than an awful lot of what goes on in the Senate.
So, David, for yourselves and for RTE, it's the home-produced programmes, really, that win with the audiences. Now, you say 40% of your current output is home-produced, as opposed to the likes of Desperate Housewives, we'll say. Is that what's given you the edge?
We said if we're going to compete, we have to find a way to home produce. The result of that is that today, TV3 as a channel has more viewers than BBC One, BBC Two and UTV combined in the Republic of Ireland.
So you're doing great. What's your problem then with RTE?
The issue is that RTE is dual funded. RTE gets all the licence fee, or nearly all the licence fee, but they also get the lion's share of advertising in the market. Now, that was fine when there was no competition in the market, when RTE was the only broadcaster. Then other broadcasters come along, and TV3, we only make money from advertising, and that's all we want, because it makes us different. It means there can be no sense of any influence from government. The problem we have is that RTE, because it's dual funded, and because of other practices, it sells its advertising very, very cheaply. That's fundamentally anti-competitive for an organisation that is dominant. They're not allowed to do that. The Competition Authority took 2 years investigating it, and they said, yes, RTE is dominant. And they said, yes, on all six counts of how you can abuse that dominance in how it sells advertising, it seemed to be doing that.
To be clear, you're in favour of the licence fee, you're in favour of public broadcasting. You just don't think RTE should get any commercial revenue.
What should happen is all the licence fees should go to RTE, because there's a real distinction between a broadcaster that's a public service broadcaster that can rely on knowing what its funding is for the next 5 years, and a state broadcaster where its funds are decided day by day or month by month or year by year by governments, in which case there's always a question mark over is the broadcaster dependent on government, and that's a real problem.
David McRedmond, so what would the impact be on RTE and on the television advertising market if that was to happen? Glenn Killane.
The immediate effect of taking advertising off RTE would be a huge increase in the cost of advertising, because the commercial impacts delivered by TV3 would not be enough to deliver into the market. And the net result would be that advertising in Ireland would be more expensive than advertising in the UK. So a country with 1.5 million households would be more expensive to advertise in than a country with over 20 million households. That doesn't seem to make sense to me. There's also an assumption that that money would go to TV3. That money would flow to the UK, would flow out of this country, which desperately needs it at the moment to invest in production. And the net beneficiary would be probably Rupert Murdoch and the likes, and not the indigenous sector here. And I think that's an incredibly short-sighted move. And I think it needs to be tackled, and it needs to be argued, and it needs to be debated. And David's entitled to his opinion, but we have a very different opinion to him.
Now, Larry Bass has been very enthusiastic about product placement, about sponsorship in his television programmes. But he's equally clear that public funding and a public broadcaster is needed.
Fundamentally, I believe there has to be a licence fee. If we as a state want to continue to have an independent view of the world, well, then we need to have an independent view on programming. We need to have Irish voices on Irish radio stations. We need to have Irish voices on Irish television programmes. And if we're going to have a future for a Gaelic state, well, then we have to invest in our cultural exports and our cultural reflections of life and Irish stories. So we have to have public resources to do that. And we as a nation have to decide to continue to pay for it. So a licence fee may change in its structure and makeup, but I think we have to have one. And in fact, I think it's too low and we should pay more.
Larry Bass of Shinawil. As Glenn Killane argues, without dual funding, RTE would have no chance of providing the services we want, like Olympic coverage.
These are not money spinners for RTE. These require licence fee funding. This is public service we're providing here. There seems to be some sort of myth that these are big money spinners. The amount of resource that we have to put into an Olympic Games is incredibly onerous. And without a licence fee funding, we would not be able to do that. We'd not be able to produce an Olympic Games. You know, we will have 40 people across the entire organisation in London. Compare that to NBC, the US. They'll have over 2,000 staff in London and they'll probably do less coverage of the Olympic Games than RTE will. That's across radio, television, online and news in Irish and in English. So that's showing we're incredibly inventive, we're efficient, but also we do require licence fee funding for those types of activities.
Glenn Killane of RTE there. I'm Brenda Power and you've been listening to The Media Show on RTE Radio 1. Join us next week when we'll be talking Irish radio and finding out what keeps you switched on.
Just about anywhere has its very own local radio station, which is for its own people. It's not narrow in that it's local, but it looks at everything through that local perspective.
And more on the fallout from that Reynolds report.
People are paid substantial salaries to bring experience and expertise to these kind of judgment calls. And if they make a serious mistake like this, there should be consequences.
And don't forget, podcasts of all four episodes of the show are now online on rte.ie/radio1/the media show, as well as full versions of interviews.